JP and Rue de la Rue Swanzor here again on your breezes. Take a big dog worthy sniffle. By order of you know who in highest doggerland, the mild and incomparable Wile E, inimitable face dog, the dog in the moon, Dogissimo in perpetua, the great high and humble dogger. It's episode 13 of Rue's Doggerland Tales, or if you prefer, the history, myths, tales, and legends of the dogs of the chase and of the chase in exile. If you have the new Dog Solutions hardware for whatever device you're using to listen to this podcast, you know already from the olfactory enhancement, make sure to turn it up if you have a stuffy nose, that today we have some cold chicken in the studio, there's some laundry on the floor that needs doing, and that I had light roasted coffee earlier today along with several walnuts. Feel free, obviously, to equalize and tune those scents to the relative strengths you prefer. If you haven't hooked up your Dog Solutions apparatus yet, or heaven forbid, haven't bounced over to dogsolutions.dog to tender your digits and get the show on the road, so to speak, I suppose you'll just have to imagine the bonus scent of summer rain soaking and curling the deep brown fur on Rue de la Rue Swanzor's back. I'm going to just go ahead right now and talk for a second about the Dog Solutions device in anticipation of your breathless interest. It has tons of amazing features, this thing. It's a real breakthrough technology, and I'm proud to be the first podcaster, the first anycaster, to get to try it out. So what it is a microphone for smells. You switch it on. It's just this little device that looks like a jet engine, very sleek and modern and cool, and you switch it on, and it inhales for a few seconds. You can hear it circulating the air through its sensors as it creates the fundamentals of a scent picture, which it then converts via proprietary, patent-pending Dog Solutions algorithms into zeros and ones. After it manages that bit of digital alchemy, and by the way, the sampling rate is astronomical on the basic model and gets almost comically astronomicaler if you spend a few extra dollars. Whatever stink it might be, I can send it all over the world to anybody who has the printer. Of course, what I'm calling a printer is, since it reproduces smells, not actually a printer, although it does work a little like your Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Okay. RGB Ruth Ginsburg Bader a printer where red, green, blue, and black make whatever color you want. That is earthy, floral, oceanic, and so on scents blended with utmost precision make any fragrance. Any fragrance. Don't ask me what the fragrance analog of black is, and don't say poop. So anyway, order it at dogsolutions.dog. It's the whiff. Get a whiff. Send a whiffer, woof. Dogsolutions.dog, just $100. Use key code Doggerland at purchase. Woof, whiff, aroo! And in case you forgot, Dog Solutions will work with you to create a one-of-a-kind bespoke dog just for you. Don't settle for a dog that'll do. Get started on your just-right dog today from Dog Solutions. So people, and I use the term loosely, so as to include within its scope pretty much all the bipedal apes that ever swaggered across a steppe, huddled on a promontory, or rocked themselves to sleep in the fog-bound heights of a rainforest spectral canopy. People hear that listless trumpet sounding, ba 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 da ba dee dee da da, that clear, solo, heedless voice in their heads, their strolling egos telling them tunefully, in a manner of speaking, telling them of their own peculiar, rare worth and worthiness, tilting ever toward the tonic of their unequivocal superiority. Says who? Says Rue de la Rue Swanzor, that's who. To put it another way, says Rue, maybe in Darwinian terms, human arrogance is at once the most galling and the most adaptive characteristic of your species and its antecedents. From the stupidest, even the stupidest among you, are convinced they're brilliant. We've persuaded ourselves, that is, the dogs have encouraged us to follow our anyway insuperable inclinations and convince ourselves that we're at the tip-top of the tower as far as animal intelligence goes. It's what we believed ever since we had the cognitive wherewithal to consider the question, but of course not quite enough of that same wherewithal to capably check our work. And upon this false conclusion, we've piled crazy edifices of thought, including the Rousseau's laughable idea that people domesticated dogs, perhaps, as some say, about 30,000 years ago, or, as some others suggest, much longer ago than that. Fetch, says Rue de la Rue Swanzor, is a game dogs invented to entertain monkeys before there was a land bridge between North and South America. Now, I don't want to get bogged down in all of what we think is probably true, paleontologically speaking, about the appearance of monkeys in South America, or about how dogs, the earliest ancestral dogs from the three trunks of the Canidae tree, might have gotten to Europe and Africa and back again, or how they came to the warm Atlantic shores of what we now call Brazil. At some point, I assume, will happen upon the evidence that what Rue de la Rue Swanzor has communicated to me is true and veritable. I don't doubt a word of it. I trust her implicitly to tell me the T-R-O-O-T-H truth. A big enough pack of dogs is a persuasive force as far as a few apes are concerned, if the apes have been caught out in the open, particularly unarmed apes. The chase's hunting strategies, refined ceaselessly for practically forever by the time of the earliest simians, wherever and whenever you want to put them, 2 million years ago, let's say, in sunny Brazil, or if you prefer, the marshy Black Sea coast of what we'd call Bulgaria today, in a forest of grand oaks and beeches, somewhere along the Velika River, maybe within earshot of some chattering mandarin ducks. A couple of dozen hunters of the chase encircle a pair of people, I call them people, early people, why not, out gathering nuts, maybe, in a meadow buzzing with insect energy, ablaze with yellow and violet and periwinkle flowers, breaking the trees in their deep shadows, the duo pause, remark the sweetness of the place, note the matted grass where deer have lately rested, probably deer, and find themselves at the center of an overwhelming number of dogs. Scary, probably, right? Sure, but there's no menace in this pack. They're friendly. One of them, not the biggest one, or the most ferocious-looking one, but rather the handsomest, the one with the most winsome smile, approaches slowly, leans languidly against the legs of one of them, pushes the side of his head against her hip, as if to say, "Pet me, we want to be your friends. Everything is cool." To the people, it's sort of a miracle. To the dogs, it's just the first step in the implementation of a plan that was carefully thought through and pre-tested, stage by stage, by a coterie of dogs assigned by the chase to a panoply of long-range efforts intended to assure dogs of their primacy and influence throughout the existence of life on Earth. So she pets him, names him with some nonsense word, which he takes care to remember. More dogs come close without threatening, with frankly affectionate manner, all practiced carefully, and others begin to play games of race and wrestle, splashing in the river, shaking off too close for courtesy, bowing and rearing, and those two people are overcome with the sheer riotous joy of it all, and they join in. It turned out to be easier than any of the dogs expected. They were pushovers, Rue says. They never really had a chance, those people. And the more they played with those dogs in that riparian paradise, the more they were rewarded. On the first day, they left with several geese already plucked, the chase dogs had trapped. The day after, they found a tall pile of walnuts, and so on. Fish, partridges, apples, rabbits, all the delicacies the land and river and sea provided, and all manner of useful things. In short, those two were trained to visit that spot every day by being rewarded for faithfully returning every day, just exactly the way we train dogs to come when we call them, if we have any skill as trainers. Fetch? Fetch was simple once they'd been trained to show up. A dog would simply drop a pear, a nut, or something, making sure the person saw, then reward the person with some bright feathers or maybe a whole bird as soon as he or she brought the item back. Because dogs can't throw. Sometimes the trainer dog dropped something buoyant in the current of the river, barked to show concern about the object floating away, and then again reward the person for returning it. Fetch. Easy. Rue says just about everything is fetch, or variation on fetch, when it comes down to it. It's something we haven't been able to agree on. I thought at first she must be joking, till she started ticking off examples in an obnoxious, barking voice, which is the tone she uses when she thinks I'm not paying close enough attention, or I'm being disingenuous, or my stupid brain is failing both of us on purpose to frustrate her, which is common enough. Tying your shoes? Fetch with string. Making hamburgers? Fetch with beef. Writing an email? Fetch with words. Shoveling the sidewalk? Planting a garden? Doing the dishes? Fetch with snow? Fetch with seeds and dirt? Fetch with crockery. Bark, 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 like it's the most obvious and common sense concept ever imagined by thinking creatures. The energy of the scold. In your incompetent head, she says, pointing at my head with a fluffy jab, there are a dozen people wiping their feet in the breezeway, hanging up their coats, checking their watches, making endless small talk. Let them come inside. Which is a pretty mean thing for your dog to say to you. So, but fetch or no, what eventually happened after the pair by the river finally got trained is the chase would bring them into the wider pack of the chase, introduce them to the several hundred dogs or more of the community, sort of as pets, for more refinement, and at this point, they were more or less permanently removed from whatever relationships they had with other people, their original clans, if you will. Rue de la Rue Swanzor wants me to be sure to say that in almost every case, the chase's human adoptees were happy to be part of the chase and only rarely, if ever, expressed any wish to rejoin their human families. She says she knows, the chase knows, there'll be those among you who consider these separations cruel. Here's what Rue de la Rue Swanzor said about that. Tell them I scoff at their ignorant, milquetoast, knee-jerk, thin-slicing, addle-pated sympathy for those dopes. Then she sat up and said, tell them, without the chase, you all would still be comically stalking grebes through cattails and settling for Fungian voles if your species still existed at all, or if it ever did exist. Rue de la Rue Swanzor cannot be bothered by wishy-washy sentimentality. For one thing, she has far too much yawning and sleeping to do. But I have also been taking a great many calls for her over the last few weeks, sorting through stacks of mail that are getting heavier every day. We've had to create a space for the business of the chase here in my house, and for several mornings now, I've been opening the door to a pair of business-like hard-nosed pointers who barely pause for a perfunctory hello before hurrying upstairs to the office and getting right down to whatever is on their agenda. And I don't mind, really, but I feel as though it's fair for me to mention that the great project's inner workings, as manifested by these bird dogs, are unclear to me, even though I spend a fair amount of time and money making sure the workers in Rue de la Rue Swanzor are well supplied with tea and ink, toast and butter, along with a fair quantity of cheese from Normandy and elsewhere, which I am somehow able to have shipped at a steep discount from an online source I am not at liberty to name, and which arrives via bicycle courier twice a week. The delivery person is an extremely pleasant and plainly dog-beloved woman from Cameroon who addresses Rue and the others in French, a language I comprehend only when spoken lentement, as they say, and even then incompletely. So she talks to me mainly in English, what little we have to say to each other, and sometimes in majuscule French, if you will, the French of shop windows and theater marquees. She says, voilà encore le fromage, and aujourd'hui j'ai plusieurs choses pour les chiens. Then she goes through the shows one by one as she takes the boxes from her panniers. Du canard, she says, quelques poissons. Like I said, though, she's very sweet, and Rue de la Rue Swanzor speaks highly of her, Umil is her name, and her family, who have, to quote Rue again, had significant connection to the chase in exile for an extraordinarily long time. When I ask how long, Rue stares at me for an eternity. She knows the last great high and humble dogger, who you called Wiley, and several before him. Umil's great-great-grandmother lived with us in Rue Swanzor when it was just a dirt path. She sighs and jumps from the couch. She was resting her head on my thigh, but she pads over to the other side of an armchair out of view and lies down on her side as if to say, well, you probably know what she means by that. Emile is beautiful, I have to say. She's taller than me by maybe a couple of inches and moves with such grace and fluency it leaves me dumbstruck. When she looks at me, catches my eyes with hers and speaks to me, whatever she says, I feel as if I've been ensorcelled by some kind of irresistibly mighty being. When she rides away, her bike seems to move without any effort on her part, as if it's simply falling down the road, impelled by horizontal gravity as she yells her goodbyes in a voice that makes every word sound like music. Au revoir, roue de la roue, au revoir, tous les beaux chiens. If I look away while she's leaving and just listen, it sounds like she's calling from everywhere all at once. Au revoir, JP! Wherever she goes, that's where I want to go. Rue usually lets me share her camembert freely. More rarely, she allows me a thin slice of Roquefort, which she says she is not supposed to eat at all. I never order it. It isn't on the list. But she can't help it. Powerless is what I am, she says, when I ask her about Roquefort. If she were the kind of dog who covers her head with her paws in shame, she would surely do it in reference to the addictive hold of that potent blue cheese. She's going to be really angry at me for being totally honest about this. She'll call it an egregious and unnecessary and unforgivable violation of her privacy. She'll say that my forthrightness could result in every kind of calamity, from spiritual to emotional, and everything above and below, that it'll probably result in incursions from all sides against her autonomy and mine. But I have to tell you, Emile brings one small round of that Roquefort for Rue de la Rue Swanzor about every fortnight and always admonishes her. You have to make it last, she says. So Rue puts it on a shelf with its cover open and inhales like she's about to attempt to track a phantom. And once, on Valentine's Day, when she thought I was asleep, I found her lying near it, her nose in the paper, softly howling to it, a song of cheesy, unrequited love and ancient doggish, its words unintelligible to me and most dogs, its emotion unmistakable. Maybe when I record these from now on, I should do it with a big Roquefort cheese in the room and the Dog Solutions whiff and coder on so you can enjoy Rue's favorite smell while you listen. Sniff along with Rue. I just might make that a regular feature. There's nothing more of substance from any of the engineers who've been writing to us about the great project, neither Hawkhurst or the fellow who first wrote to us, except a friendly note from the former to say hello, acknowledging our correspondence, and wish us well. Instead, we received this chilly missive from a person who calls himself, a little too grandly, Rue and I agree, Octopus. He says, hey, Rue de la Roodle, queen of the noodle and JP, you'll never guess who this is. The great project is a great big joke, and it'll never happen because it's impossible. Octopus underlines impossible 3 times. Doggerland is too heavy to move. Even if you could move it, you'll never get the people to let it happen. And even if you somehow talk them into it, I'll make sure you fail no matter what. Then he signs it Octopus with his big, messy flourish, like somebody who just started practicing Chinese graffiti and has been drinking a lot of plum wine. So we'll just see about all that, I suppose. But Octopus sounds to me like a sixth-grade brat the way he writes, and certainly not something we need to take seriously as we continue to pursue the great project by order of the great high and humble dogger. Next episode will be number 14, and it will mark the beginning of what I'll call Season 2 of the History Tales, Myths and Legends of the Dogs of the Chase in Doggerland and of the Chase in Exile. Thus, this episode I'm wrapping up right now is the last episode of Season 1, number 13. Thanks for listening. Be sure you pop a little something in a little toast and tea kitty to help keep the cheeses coming. Contribute to the great project on Patreon, Facebook, Twitter, Instadog, RooTube, Dog-a-Doodle-Doo. Find it everywhere you might think to look for stuff like this. And make sure you tell all your doggy friends about me and Rue de la Rue Swanzor. Write some reviews. We need all your help and we appreciate it. Find us everywhere everywhere, like I said. Podcasts are Cast, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. And remember, puppies the way. I'm John Perry. Thanks for listening.